first and foremost, why I joined the party, my study of the history of the party relative to the Democrats. My mother told me as a young kid when I was in that in 1976, first presidential election, my mother says, don't be a Democrat because I'm a Democrat. Your daddy's a Democrat. You live in a Democratic city. Go out and discover for yourself who you are, what you believe. That's your orientation. That's your North Star. And I did. And I understood the history of my party as one that was founded first and foremost on the individual rights and liberties of everyone under our Constitution, regardless of the color of their skin, which is why we broke from the Whigs in the first place, because we couldn't countenance the idea that we would. And it was a struggle. And I appreciate that honest struggle of Abraham Lincoln, caught between wanting to appease those who were pro-slavery to keep the Union together, at the same time recognizing that that was antithetical to what the words on the document said. And so I appreciate that struggle, and I appreciate the party that struggled with that. And so, and then coming out and saying that I, as a Black man, am as valued and as important to this country as the white man. That was the first thing that really struck me. And then to go on and to memorialize it in the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. And we know the history and the consternation around all of that. And then to come out and say, okay, in a post-slavery era, we're going to memorialize it further by putting in place the economic mooring, 40 acres and a mule, first affirmative action program that will help anchor and reestablish your role and presence. But then to know that that didn't just apply to me, but it applied to others who came to this shore as a party that supported immigration, for example, party that supported protecting the environment, Teddy Roosevelt. Again, affirmative action, Richard Nixon gave us affirmative action. Right. So we bitch about affirmative action, but it was us who created it because we recognize the importance of the individual journey towards the American dream and that there can be obstacles along the way. So that for me is the first and most important thing of what it is to be a Republican, is that you recognize the value of everyone in this country, no matter how they got here, no matter their story. Being able to realize for themselves the power of the American dream and the individual rights that come from being protected by our Constitution. The second thing that's important for me is recognizing that there is a valuable role for government, state, local, federal. And having been a statewide elected official, I appreciated this more, came to appreciate this more than anything else. That there is a role, but it is a limited role. So the idea of a limited government is not just two words put together, but in that is not it's neither a move towards a anti-government, right? We hate the federal government. I would always cringe when Reagan say, "Hey, you know the worst words in the you can hear is I'm from the federal government. I'm here to help." Great laugh line, but I think it did a disservice to what government is there for, ultimately. And I get the politics of saying it and why it works that way as a catchphrase. But it does undermine exactly what Republicans, I thought, saw the utilization of government to make government work for citizens. We don't want to raise taxes. You know, we all have the argument Democrats want to, oh, let's pay more for this program. Okay, well, is the program working? Because if the program's not working, why are we putting more money into it, right? So I get this notion out of Trump world about, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, tackling that. Okay, fine. But that's not what you're doing because you're not examining whether or not these programs are functionally important for the work that needs to be done. Whether it's a STEM program or whether it's a food program or whether it's a cultural program, right? So making sure government does what it's supposed to do in its limited capacity, then get the hell out of the way, which gets to the third part, the free markets. That's where my dream rests. I may have entrepreneurial, inspirations. Let me follow that. Let me explore that. and let the government not stand in the way of that. So regulation and all of that stuff. Yeah, I want clean water. I want clean air. Let's regulate it, but don't regulate it to the point where I can't breathe or swallow. Right? So for me, these three things really do matter, anchored first and foremost by the fact that I'm free to access the other two. And I do so with a limited government not standing in my way. And I do so with the American dream squarely in front of me. I want our party to talk about that. I don't want to deal in the bullshit we're doing right now because it's antithetical to everything that drew me in. And so I don't want to play to your grievance. I don't want to make you more pissed off so I can raise another dollar from you. I don't want to make you angry at the Black neighbor or the Hispanic neighbor or the white neighbor because I'm going to gain likes and tweets from it. And that part of the party, what we've sunk into, is what pisses me off. Now, I call myself, additionally, Orrin, a Motel 6 Republican. Why? Because I believe someone's got to keep the lights on for the things I just described. And for the things I think you fundamentally articulate as well. And so I'm always putting a new light bulb in because these bastards keep shooting it out with another level of bullshit crazy. All right, another bulb, put it in because I want the light to stay on. I recognize Ronald Reagan in his imagery created about this country as a shining city on a hill. The rest of that story is you and me, Orrin, my Democratic neighbors, the individual who just came to the country, however, legally or illegally. Why did they do that? Why do we do what we do? Because we are the light in that city. And we need, as a party, we once talked about the country in those terms, right? The last great effort under the Bush administration to do something on immigration, conservatives killed it. The last great effort to do something about immigration after we bitched all day, all for 4 years about it, right? Conservatives under Trump killed it. So every time we have a chance to make the light brighter, we shoot the bulb out. And that frustration, that tension for me is why I stand where I stand in opposition to what this party in its current iteration is doing. But I stay. I get it all the time, man. Why are you still Republican? Because of the things I just said. Why won't you leave? Because I don't believe in what the other side is doing. I don't philosophically align with Democrats. I'm pro-life, right? And I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. I want clarity, right? But I'm also against the death penalty because I'm a Catholic Christian. And guess what? Life is life, regardless of whether it's in the womb or a jail cell. So these things, for me, are animated by the philosophical thread of a republicanism, flawed and fraught as it was, that inspired a 17-year-old Black kid growing up in D.C. to join the party. And it started with a man named Lincoln who had a friend named Frederick Douglass that helped shape the party that stood about individual rights, liberties, and freedoms. Because without those three things, I don't care what your tax bracket is. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether or not we like Putin or play with Stormer in Great Britain. So that's kind of where my head is, and which is why I appreciated your engagement with John Stewart, because at various times in your conversation, I heard me. I felt my brand of republicanism. This is a thread, you know? It's like, okay, yes, this is what it's about. This is why we say and do what we do. And a lot of my resistance to Trumpism and MAGAism, because I think it is not genuine. It's performative. It's reactive. It's theater. And I don't appreciate that. And then the ugly underbelly of it, when you're getting into nationalism, white Christo nationalism, is bullshit I don't want to play with because it's antithetical to what I believe the country should be about. But that's the debate within our party. Some have left. Others stay because they're crazy like me. Others stay because they are trying to offer up a philosophy and an understanding and that you present. And so we see all these things kind of playing out, man. And it's just, it's exciting on one hand, it's frustrating as hell on another. And, I believe I can still have more say inside my tent than going outside and being mad at it. And, you know, that to me is not what Republicans should do.
That's very interesting. Well, I know we're running out of time. I want to make two quick points about
sure. About I'd that. Love to hear your feedback about that.
Well, so
two I went points. Off on a soliloquy. You open the door, baby. I'm living with this every day. So
no, like, it's super interesting. And the two things I would say about it: one, you know, your description about the things that you valued in the Republican Party and are most important to you, were all about process. They were all about the means. None of them actually spoke to what substantive ends or outcomes you want to see for people. And I think that's a huge, huge problem with the way that the Republican Party had been operating, because it really allows you to avoid a lot of the trade-offs that other people struggle with. So I could take everything you just said and say, well, that's great. That's why we should embrace free trade with China, right? It is optimistic and forward-looking, and it's takes a welcome global view rather than a nationalist one. And it's going to provide a lot of opportunity. It's going to uplift maybe hundreds of millions of people around the world. It's going to mean more consumption. You didn't actually give me anything to grab onto that would acknowledge that there was anything wrong with the path that the Republican Party was on. And so I think
Don't get that twisted. I mean, I get all the time when I start to apply that, what I just described to you, to everyday life. And this is where coming actually, because a lot of people flap their lips because they're in offices where they don't have to take responsibility for shit. Congressmen don't take responsibility for shit. Senators don't take responsibility for anything. Governors do. Go talk to Republican governors and lieutenant governors. Go talk to Republican county executives. When you're on the ground, go talk to Republican mayors. That's where the application of what you believe confronts the reality of someone's condition and situation. No, I didn't give you all of that. Now, if you want to pull back that onion, that's a whole nother show, because then I'm going to confuse the hell out of you, because there are going to be some things where I'm going to go, the Democrats got that shit right. Right? And we need to acknowledge that. And not get stuck on that stupid pretending that we can't move towards working with unions. And I was really happy to hear you say that earlier, because that's not process. That's reality. Workers matter. And if they need to be, I grew up in a household where my mother said to me that one of the worst things she ever decided to do was not join the union when it was offered at the laundry in which she worked. And she went through that process, and I went through that process with her, and I began to appreciate why she suddenly valued what that would have meant to her and her family as she sat there retiring on minimum wage and trying to put me through Catholic grade school and high school and Johns Hopkins University, making minimum wage, as opposed to what could have been had her laundry embraced a union that would have fought more for her worker rights so she could better feed and educate her family. So I get those storylines. I just gave you top line shit. We want to get down into it. The application is where you take that philosophy of a limited government. Okay, now it's going to confront the reality, as I did as a lieutenant governor, when a young woman said, hey, I'm about to lose my home trying to do a program to improve myself because I can't pay my rent. Because when I come to this class, my employer docks my pay because I'm not there. And so therefore my paycheck is short and I can't pay my rent. Okay, now I had to deal with that. And I did. And I put government to work on her behalf. A lot of my Republican friends would have gone, well, then she needs to go find something else to do. And so when we lose sight of that connective between the what I described as those three philosophical things, dealing with the practical reality of life, that's where I think we kind of have veered off. And so I don't want to leave you with the impression that it's all process for me. It isn't, because I had to run a government. I had to balance budgets. I had to do all the things that I wanted to do that I was asked to do by the governor and by the people when I was in office, and having to confront every day the real life example that people lived out. And so, yeah, I can wax poetically about, you know, free trade markets and all this other stuff. But shit, at the end of the day, someone's got to put food on their table. And if my party stands in the way of that, then that's a problem when we don't acknowledge that they have to put food on their table, because we're stuck on this idea that everyone should pull themselves up by their bootstrap. So I said to Jack Kent, last point, one of the last things I did together with Jack Kent before his death was a house party in Bethesda, Maryland. And Jack Kent, such an incredible guy. You know his thing about a rising tide lifts all boats, right? But you know where my Republicanism had led me by that point as a young man? I remember saying to Jack as we're walking out of the house, I said, man, I really appreciate that, but it caused me to think about one thing. What do you do if you don't have a boat? I said, we can't be just about telling people that a rising tide is going to lift all boats, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. What if I got boots? We need to help create the means for people to access the dream. So when that rising tide comes in, they don't drown. They're not forgotten. And as a party, we don't talk about that part of it, right? We think DEI is somehow a crime. You mean the diversity of your Irish ancestors wasn't important? You mean the equity afforded your German cousins when they came to these shores wasn't important? You mean being included as an Italian back at the turn of the century wasn't important? So don't redefine DEI because it now touches Black and brown people, and it is something that comes out of the Black experience in this country as something negative. That to me is bullshit, and that's not Republicanism, because Republicanism recognizes everybody's dream, however they define it. And DEI is not a government program. It is asking governments and institutions to recognize that they're Black and brown people who can be disserved. And yes, the racism is still real because banks still redline communities. And if we can't acknowledge that as a party, that's not process. We can't acknowledge that as a party, we fail as a party. And it's not conservative to say, oh, that's, you know, we don't do that and we're going to criminalize it. That's just un-American for me, because that's not what we do. All right. If we can't tell the story of Black and brown people, come on. Then we're stripping out the lunch counter out of the Black American Museum. Why? We don't want people to see the lunch counter that Black individuals risked their lives to sit at to make the country own what was written in the Constitution? Come on, stop it. Why are we doing
well, that? Well, look, that's a very interesting interpretation of the DEI issue in the country.
That interpretation
today
is what they're telling us. Well, that interpretation, you're telling me what it is.
It's just very funny to hear you say something like DEI is not a government program when obviously a huge problem is the extent to which the government did make it a government program. But I do want to make just the one final point, which is, I think the point you made about what attracted you to the party, I think is really interesting. What is striking to me about the Trump approach, including what he says about DEI and so forth, is literally how many times more 17-year-old Black men are attracted to it than are attracted to the version that attracted you. And I'm very curious what you make of that.
Look, I'm playing to your machismo. Look, I can tell you what that is. I mean, it's a whole lot of things. I'm playing, you know, I'm offering up gold lamé tennis shoes because you think young Black men are into sneakers. I'm playing up, you know, we're gonna protect your right to smoke menthol cigarettes. Like, that's a thing. I mean, the stereotyping and the sort of...
I'm sorry, just to jump in, that's not the Trump pitch. In fact, Kamala Harris...
That was very much the Trump pitch.
No, Kamala Harris put out a five-point agenda for opportunity agenda for young Black men, of which one of the five items was Bitcoin and one of the five items was marijuana legalization. So
yeah,
I've seen what that looks like, and that's not what the Trump appeal was.
But that's because, you know what the marijuana piece was? Because Black entrepreneurs, the young Black men who went to jail because of marijuana laws, now have the opportunity to benefit from actually being entrepreneurial in that space. That's what that was about. It wasn't plain that Black people like to smoke marijuana. It's like, guess what? The thing that you went to jail for, you now can begin to build a dream around because white kids are already doing it. That's what that was about. So, you know, this idea that you sort of stereotype your approach to the Black community. So let me tell you this. Oh, you're going to now criminalize DEI across the federal government. Can't talk about it. Can't do anything, say anything. Oh, but you're going to host a DEI program, a Black History Month program at the White House. Really? It says stupid across my forehead. So the reality of it is, don't play me. Don't come at me in thinking that you're just going to level up and show me a statistic that young Black men are you know, coming into the Republican Party. What's anchoring them? What's the sell here? I don't understand what it is. I haven't heard it. I mean, when I was national chairman, I went into my community and got criticized for it. The first town hall I did was in Harlem, and you thought I was asking the party to go to the moon. And I did a town hall at Howard University on healthcare, not on tennis shoes. Right. So this is my point. It's like, talk to me about the substance of my life and what I'm trying to do. You say I'm entrepreneurial because I am. Then don't just throw up this crazy stuff that you think appeals to me because it's got bling attached to it. Bitcoin. All talk about markets I can right now access. Right. Talk about things I can right now do. And that's all my push is. So, yeah, I get the numbers have moved, but you need to dig down into what those numbers are actually telling you.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.